Harris realized that her reaction could be construed as unflattering.
I'm sorry, it's just, I mean...
We aren't, I know. But since I never married, they've been trying all the theories about why not, one after another, until the end and back again. That crowd that rides the Blue Hunt is the worst. Steph, in particular, would rather talk than ride, as you can tell when you see him mounted.
You know, I wouldn't talk about you or Ronnie.
I know. It's not that. It's just, I want you to enjoy this, Harris. Not as my captain, but as my guest. And it occurred to me that you might not have their sort of gossip in the military.
Oh, don't we? Same both places, I expect. Don't worry. I can be dense when it suits me.
Good. If you pay attention in the Blue Hunt, you'll probably be up in green very soon. They're looking for several things. How solid you are over fences, how dumb the horse comes back, and whether you interfere in the field.
Do you want me in the Green Hunt?
Of course I do. Heavens, girl, I wouldn't have brought you if I'd thought you'd be stuck in a lower hunt the whole season. It wouldn't have been fair to you, or as much fun for me. Go on now and get your rest. I'll be interested in hearing about your day.
That last visit to the tailor had taken out the slight wrinkle in the back of her jacket. Harris looked at herself in the mirror with a mixture of amusement and pride. Amusement because the clothing proper to fox hunting still struck her as ludicrous. Why wear light-colored tight breeches when you were going to gallop big dirty animals through the mud? And pride, because at over 40 she still had the condition to look 16 or so in those same tight pants, white shirt, and dark jacket. Despite the training and Cecilia's assurance that she was ready, Harris found the chaos in the Blue Hunt's meeting area tingling along her nerves. She looked for Neil, but saw only the second level of help.
Of course, Neil is with the Green Hunt. Surely he chose the mounts, though.
She eyed the big chestnut gelding being led toward her with some concern.
Tiger 2, need a leg?
In a moment.
Harris went through the drill Cecilia had taught her, checking the bridle and girth herself, then accepted a leg and swung into the saddle. She hoped the beast's name did not reflect his temperament.
He pulls sometimes, but he'll answer a sharp check. Keep him back and calm, and he'll go all day. Get in a fight with him, and you wish you hadn't.
Great. She had a problem horse for her first hunt, her first performance in front of everyone. She looked down at the groom, expecting to see sly satisfaction, but the woman's smile was friendly.
Don't worry. He's not a bad one for the first time out. He can jump anything, and will. The only thing is, don't let him go too strong till he's worked himself down a bit.
Thank you. Any other advice?
Well, I wouldn't let him slow down in water. He likes to roll. If you come to a stream, get him over in a hurry.
I'll be careful.
The groom stepped back. Harris looked around and saw that about half the riders were up. She had room to walk the red horse, Tiger, in a small circle, and did so, first one way, then the other. As the minutes passed, she calmed down. It was just another horse, and they were going out to ride over just another field. She had told herself that same lie in other situations, and it always helped. The hounds led the way, their long tails. Harris couldn't make herself call such a biologic ornament a stern. Ships had sterns. Whipping back and forth or carried high, eager. She got only a glimpse of them before the rest of the field passed out the gate and blocked her view. She intended to make sure Tiger understood who was in charge while they were still at a walk. As they came around the end of the stable wing, Harris could see both the other hunts moving away to the east and west. The beginners, so Cecilia had called them, would hunt the flat, open country to the east, where the fences were lower and the pseudo-foxes lived in brushy thickets. The Green Hunt had the western hills, with long open slopes and timber at the top and bottom. And they, the Blue Hunt, had a mixed country, rather like lumpy potatoes in a kettle. Little hills with little creeks between them, little patches of woods and others of brush, odd-shaped fields bordered with stone walls or ditches or both. Verisimilitude, Cecilia had explained, influenced only some of Lord Thornbuckle's eccentricities. That rather lumpy country had been the first colony settlement on this world, bought out by one of the present owner's ancestors. They had tried to make a quick profit out of open-pit mining to pay off their initial investment, then botched the mid-level terraforming that was supposed to convert the area into something their heirs could live on and from. Instead, they went broke and left behind ugly pit mines, irregular heaps of spoil, ponds and wandering streams fouled with acid and heavy metals. Now, some hundreds of years later, the area was still unsafe for use in any food chain humans would use, but it could support hardy plants, animals with a tolerance for heavy metals and acid water, and recreation. Wool and leather and sport were its crops. Tiger yanked on the bit, and Harris brought her mind firmly back to the immediate moment. Someone trotted past. She found it hard to recognize, in the plain black coats and hats, the people she had met at dinner the night before, and the red horse wanted to follow. She refused, and met his attempt to sidle out from behind the horse in front with a firm leg. He tested her in the next few minutes, as they rode to cover, with a curvet here and a pretense at a shy there. She was reminded of certain troublemakers she had known and had no problem keeping him under control.
Ah, Captain Serrano!
The grinning man next to her was the tall, lanky blonde Cecilia had said liked talk better than riding. He was on a horse which looked like a stuffed caricature of the animal Neil had shown Cecilia. Large, dark brown, but this time coarse and bulgy instead of powerful and sleek. And he rode sloppily. Even Harris could tell that.
Lovely morning, isn't it? Are you ready for Tiger? Did they tell you?
That he pulls, yes. And to keep him out of the water.
Harris glanced around. They were near the tail of the group, and she could tell from the tension in the reins that Tiger wasn't happy about it.
You don't have to stay back here. Midfield's enough. Just keep him away from the leaders.
I'm fine. I like to watch the others.
Cecilia had told her to stay well back, even this far back. And she trusted Cecilia's advice more than someone who sat his horse like a jellied custard. Steph shrugged and kicked his horse into a trot. Harris anticipated Tiger's attempt to lunge forward and rehearsed for the 100th time what Cecilia had told her and what she had read. The hounds would be turned loose to find the smell, the scent, of one of the pseudo-foxes, and then they would give tongue. Now that Harris had heard them from a distance, she agreed that barked was inadequate. With the hounds following the scent, the field would follow, cautiously, because pseudo-foxes, like their old Earth predecessors, were tricky beasts. More than once, they'd popped into view in the midst or even rear of the field, causing a wild confusion of horses and hounds and usually getting clean away. One had to give the pack time to work the scent, to untangle the maze the prey left, and push the fox into the open. Only when the fox was sighted did things move faster. Eventually, very fast. They came to a scrubby wood bordered on one side by a tangle of 2-meter brush. Riders gathered in a clump, most checking girths and stirrup leathers. Harris put a leg forward cautiously and found that Tiger's girth could come up another notch, just as the groom had said. She drew in a long breath of cold, moist morning air, on which the smell of horse and dog and wet clay hung suspended in a fundamental cleanliness utterly unlike ship's air. Planets felt so spacious. There always seemed to be room somewhere beyond, although she knew very well they were as tightly limited as any ship, just larger. Something small and gray and bouncy, not a pseudo-fox, but something it probably ate, shot into the clearing and two horses shied away from it. Tiger threw up his head, but Harris held him firmly, and the little animal scuttered through the field without causing any real damage. Another animal, Harris got a good look at this one, and it was a small, black tree climber with a bushy tail, clung to a nearby tree. Around her, the riders gathered up reins and edged into position. Some began moving at a walk in the direction of the noise. For a long time, they seemed to move at a walk or slow trot, making their way through the woods and through a lane in the brush beyond it. Tiger tossed his head a lot, but otherwise gave Harris no trouble. At the end of the brush, a low stone wall offered the first chance to test jumping skills in the field. Harris, at the end of the field, had to wait a long time while others scrambled over, some with difficulty. By the time it was her turn, stones lay tumbled at the foot, and the wall was scarcely a half meter high. Tiger bounced over it with contempt, ears flat, and kicked up on the far side. Only those who had had refusals and turned aside to wait were behind her now. She could see the backs of the first riders rising as their horses leaped an obstacle across the field she'd just jumped into. Tiger fought the bit all the way across the field, took off late for the rail fence on its far side, and whacked it with his forelegs. Harris had no trouble staying on, but she could tell her shoulders would hurt if he was this stubborn all day long. The fence seemed to have settled him, though, for he followed the field along a track through sparse trees without trying to race ahead. Harris couldn't see exactly where they were headed next, but she felt more confidence in her ability to survive this odd ritual. Tiger's strong trot brought the field back to her, as most of the riders chose to squeeze through a gate at the end of the track rather than jump another higher wall. Some of those who had tried the jump hadn't made it. Harris saw one woman climbing back onto her horse, and a man stalking a loose horse which was slyly moving off just too fast to be caught. Beyond the gate, they faced a sluggish stream, well muddied by recent crossings, and a steep slope across it up one of the small irregular hills. Remembering the groom's advice, Harris took a firm contact and gave Tiger a smart tap in the ribs. He plunged into the water and lurched up the far bank. Harris couldn't remember if she was supposed to avoid trotting uphill or down. Someone had said something about it, she thought. So she walked sedately up, trusting that she could see where everyone was from the top. Tiger's ears were no longer back. Apparently, he'd given up the fight. She had imagined a hill like an overturned bowl, with a definite top, from which she could see all sides. As soon as the slope flattened, she realized her mistake. She might as well have assumed that being at the top of a loading platform or the flight deck of her carrier would let her see everything going on below. From the irregular and unlevel top of the hill, the downward slopes were mostly invisible. Some fell off steeply, and others were hidden in clumps of trees or brush. She looked around for a clue. The ground had plenty of hoof prints, but she was no tracker to know which were recent. Far off in the distance, tiny horses stretched across the slope of another hill, but that couldn't be the hunt she was following. It was too far away. She hadn't heard the hounds for some time, she realized. She'd just been following the tail-end riders. She felt stupid and bored, and suddenly very irritated with Lady Cecilia. Surely this was not what riding to hounds was supposed to be like, dawdling along at the end of a group of people who fell off and got lost. How could they call it hunting? Only those in the front of the group were actually hunting, and they were just following the hounds, who were chasing a fake fox, an artificial animal designed to be quarry. The whole thing was a fake, a pretense of historical accuracy, modified for modern convenience. A quiver beneath her reminded her that she wasn't standing on a machine or a fake animal, but riding a real living animal with its own initiative. Tiger's ears were forward, pricked, and he stamped the ground with a forehoof. She looked in the direction of his gaze. The little horses had disappeared into a wood. Too far away still, she was sure, but Tiger didn't think so. She nudged Tiger into motion.
You like to hunt, they told me. Find the damned hunt, then.
Tiger picked up a trot, and as the downhill slope steepened, he lunged into a gallop. Harris had just time to think she shouldn't have let him do that. Then they were in the trees, and she was too busy keeping her head off limbs to worry about it. Tiger took the fence from trees to grass in an easy bound, crossed the field in five strides, and rolled over the wall at the far side into a track Harris had not noticed until they were in it. No trees. A long, curving ride up and around the shoulder of another hill, through an open gate, down across a grassy field. Tiger, wiser than she, skirted the rock-edged sinkhole in the middle and made for a gap he evidently knew well. A downward rocky slope where even Tiger slowed to a walk and Harris got her breath back as they slithered through some spicy-smelling trees toward another creek. That had been fun, if scary. She began to think that whether it counted as hunting or not, it was more fun to ride fast than slow. By this time, Harris had no idea where they were, but the horse's ears still pricked forward. He minced across the little creek and into the woods on the far side.